The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
People say I ain't no good, and I'm crazy as a loon. Cause I shave my head in the morning, and pick guitar in the afternoon. Just like old Chief and Charlie, I like to lay around in the shade. Well, I ain't got no money, but you better believe I got it made. Cause I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. If you don't like the way I'm living, just leave this bald-headed country boy alone.
Thank y'all for tuning in to the podcast. I got a bunch of my friends in a room with beer in their hands and, you know, love in their heart and probably some bad jokes. So this is going to be a shit show from start to finish, but please hold on tight with us. See, she's already fucking giggling. I'm not even, hadn't even got in this good. But Miss Cassidy Daniels sitting next to me.
Hello, everyone.
Miss Heather's on the other side of her.
Hello.
Tell them about your, or just tell them the name of your podcast real fast before we start.
Wandering the Wild Mess with Heather Morgan.
Yeah, I didn't know she had a podcast the whole time I knew her. Yeah, you should probably tell that to people that have podcasts. My buddy beside her, Mr. Cole Goodwin.
Hey.
Hello, sir.
How
I'm going to go ahead and apologize to you now.
For what?
This probably isn't your cup of tea. You're a good Christian fellow, and there's a lot of heathens in here.
So you give that spiel every time I'm in a room. I tell you every time.
You're one of my favorites, though. Like, there's just some people I don't want to let down. You're one of them.
Thank
Speaking
you.
Of people, I don't give a shit if I let down, though. Chili Dog and
Hey there, how are
each
you?
Other. And Connor and Amber, you can't see them because we couldn't get everybody in the camera.
White Steve Harvey in the building.
Did you say White Steve Harvey?
He's the White Steve Harvey.
Oh, yeah, we're already just going to get canceled. You look like Alan Jackson as he had like cystic fibrosis. You do. But hey, it works for you. It does. But you're sitting next to Alan Jackson if he had AIDS. Little skinny, everybody.
You talking about getting canceled over here?
I am.
Ain't even been in Nashville, much less Montgomery, motherfucker.
I am positive that that joke is good with everybody. Then on the other side,
more like Matthew McConaughey. He actually was.
You do look like the dude from Dallas Buyers Club.
Dallas Buyers Club, skinny, nice to meet you.
Have you ever seen Dallas Buyers Club?
Josh Harry in the house.
Yeah. It's about a dude to get Matthew McConaughey gets AIDS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie.
You kind of look like that.
There you go.
And a bull shoot in Texas, sounds about right.
Shut the fuck up, skinny. And then some more adults in here. Miss Missy, thank you for coming with us again. You have been. You got to get your mic way closer to you.
Thank you for having me.
You have been fun. It's been a pleasure to get to know you the past couple months.
Yeah.
And then one of my also favorites, Miss Lockwood Barr.
Hey.
I am so sorry for you and Cole Goodwin. the rest of y'all, this is what it is. See, what's funny, I said her name. She knows.
I didn't hear
it. You wouldn't. You wouldn't. Anyway, so we used to do these shows all the time when we came to Nashville, but then Hasten and everybody was real cool to let us start doing stuff at Live Oak. So we kind of backed off on doing stuff like at the Airbnbs or studios that we went and recorded at. But it's real cool to get to know the artist when the song getting played or when you're not having to talk about that. I'm real big on the why of people. Like, why should I listen to this person? There's a lot of really talented people in this town and all over music. There's some people like you fall in love with, their personality, just everything about them. And when you're doing a show like this and everybody's just listening and getting to know you, that's when all of a sudden they're like, damn, I really want to go download all their music. I want to find out more about them. So thanks to Hasten, because he fucked all this up to where I didn't do this no more. And now I'm like, you know what? Let's do both. I'm here a week at a time, so why not have fun with all the artists? I know some of y'all got some stuff coming up with us. Cole's going to be at our Honky Tonk Nights Josh Terry's Honky Tonk Nights at the Hummingbird, April the 19th.
That's correct.
That's going to be fun. They love you in Macon. I'm glad to have you back and me hosting it.
I'm glad to be there.
Yeah.
I mean it, too.
It's going to be hard to get you to talk. Cole's actually a good time. I know that sometimes it doesn't seem like it.
No, I am. I am. I've been busy all day.
He's real, like, hyper-focused on being successful. So he's just like, sometimes you're like, damn, Cole. Just
sometimes I kind of.
But then the next thing
you
know. I
kind of zone out sometimes.
But then the next thing you know, it's like, Cole, who you been out on the road with the past couple weeks?
Zach Attack, Zach Top.
Yeah. So never mind what I said about having a good time, because if I could be on the road with Zach Top all the time lately, I'd fucking shut up and do whatever Cole's doing.
No, I kind of zone out every now and then, but I'm here, I promise.
Well,
and I'm looking forward to Macon. Really looking forward to it.
It's going
to
be fun.
Got a bunch of family and friends in Macon.
Who else? I know Cassidy. You're the only one in here that's part of our April 20th show down in Alabama, right?
Band of heathens down there.
Whenever I play, there's like some of y'all I'll send some of the venues that we work with. Like, I'll send them their music. Like, I've done it to everybody in this room. And I've been like, hey, look, if I've got – one thing I'm real big on is if I've got to host a show, I can't host it with people I don't like or their music that I don't like. Like, it's real hard for me. It's hard for me to fake a smile and be like, coming up next is so-and-so. They're amazing. And they're not. Like, you don't want to do it. So – she was one of the ones that we're having a back road bash in Snead, Alabama, Back Road Park, April the 20th. It's her, Miles Gee, it's Jason Michael Carroll, and it's Riley Anderson. And it's a $20 ticket for like 6 hours worth of entertainment. Man, shit. I'm glad you're coming. The point of me saying I send people music stuff, the second I sent their stuff, they wanted to come see you play one of our shows at Live Oak. Aww. And they were like, oh, fuck yeah. They were like,
I have that effect on, man.
You do. What's that fucking song that you sing? Well, real quick, did any of y'all listen to the show that I did with like Allie Colleen and Emma and Kenzie and all them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, one thing that I try my best not to do is if you're a female artist, is to sexualize you.
Oh, God.
No, I'm not trying to be weird. Like, it's y'all don't want to be. You want to be an artist.
I do. I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Well,
I grew up ugly. This personality was all I had. Now I'm pretty, so.
She's ready. Permission granted.
Well, you're going to get this more than anybody.
As she just like slowly starts leaning into Jenna.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I sent them a clip of you doing the, it's like a song.
Crazy Love?
Yeah. And I was like,
I know what
you're
talking
gonna
about.
Get you hot.
The one time
bothered.
I have seen you play, I was like, whoa.
Way.
Swear.
Oh, you have that effect.
Swear.
I can't help that, but.
So you're going to do it now, right? We all get to watch?
It's okay.
Have you not seen her do Crazy Love
not,
yet?
Uh-oh. No, I'm going to look it up after this.
Yeah. It is.
It's just me screaming for 3 minutes.
Excellent.
It's sexy. I don't think I'd describe
I
love
it. Screaming.
I wouldn't describe it the way
hey,
she
if it's one
did.
Of y'all, 3 minutes is a lot longer than any of y'all's going to last if that's I'm screaming.
Right. Hey, I said four earlier.
I'm just going to tell you, that's probably the truth. That is. Some people like to win races and some people just like to compete. I'm
slow
all about competing.
Slow
I don't
and
care
easy.
If I win or not, as long as I show up to the fucking pit.
Slow and easy wins the race.
Hey, this is why you can't do this with normal people.
Uh-oh.
This will get off track real quick.
Sorry, buddy.
But anyway, those are the two things we were promoting. I think some of y'all got some other stuff. Before this gets off the rails too much,
oh, Lord.
Now would be the time to say what you've got coming out or anything. Like, if you got something coming out, raise your hand. If you don't, there we go. Let's let Lockwood go first.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm super excited. I've got a couple different things in the pipeline, but I got to go down to Fame Studios for the first time in January as a utility player. And one of the tunes that I played on, and I got to play my daddy's Gibson banjo, and
that's
it's
cool.
It's hitting syndicated radio in a month. So I can't say any more about it, but I'm very excited for that. And so is my daddy. And then I'm going to be going on tour with my trio, Sequoia South. We're headlining a couple festivals up in Minnesota, and I'm doing a bunch of film and TV music, so lots going on. But I think I'm mostly excited that my daddy's banjo is going to be all across the country with Bo Bites. So
very cool.
See, that's how I cry like a bitch right there. Like, just as a dad, the second you say that, that's just like, that's fucking cool.
Dude, Lockwood and I were going to write last week, and she's like, I'm going to bring my banjo. And I was like, okay. And then she brought it, and then she started, like, picking on that thing. I was like, oh, my God. Like, it was my favorite thing ever. And then we wrote a song that we're trying to pitch to a couple trios in town, and that makes sense. I didn't even know you were in a trio. I've known you for so long and, like,
know
barely anything.
Well, the trio is newer. It's a new part of my,
so oh my gosh.
It's been just a fun adventure.
That makes sense. You're, like, one of the most talented girls in town I know, so I'm like, let's go.
Likewise. So I have such a, like, talent crush on you.
I think we all do on both of y'all.
Oh, my God.
Lee Tucker, he's the only reason, like, I know Harley, like, any of y'all.
Yeah.
And he told me about you about the same time he told me about Kenzie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you have to have them on the show. You're going to love them.
Lee Tucker's the man. Like, he's
Please
just...
Please don't say that again. Like, give him, Eris, give him an inch. Don't give him a mile.
Okay. Lee Tucker's a man. How about that?
Some would question it, but yeah, we'll go with that. Anytime I get a chance to shit on my big brother, I'm going to shit on him.
Fair enough.
He
Life's
deserves
short.
It.
Well. Yeah, no, we met in Denmark, and... on the plane to Denmark, and...
did you think he was like one of them real trolls under the bridge? Like, you know how over there they actually believe
well,
in
I,
shit?
I couldn't decide because, you know, of what he was wearing, I couldn't decide if he was, like, you know, in
I
costume
I bet he looked like
not.
A Walmart greeter. Lee Tucker has a way of dressing to where he looks like he's trying
no,
to
No, my favorite
your
thing was that on the international flight from, I think it was, like, Atlanta to Copenhagen... you know, we're supposed to get fed like two or three meals because it's one of those like overnight flights. And he just starts pulling out bags of chips and apples and peanut butter and like passing them around. I was like, I just remember thinking like, I love this dude and we're gonna be friends.
Did you have to go to any restaurants over there with him?
Oh, he was my foodie. Like everybody else was like, whatever, we'll just go to McDonald's. And like Lee, Matt Rogers and I would go find like the local restaurant and just order a bunch of entrees and just start passing them around.
He is the fucking worst person on the planet to go to a normal restaurant to.
Why?
He will ask, like, the waiter
He'll go
or
to
whoever. He'll ask them, like, if you're ordering chicken, he'll be like, is this free-range chicken? Where does chicken come from? He wants to know knowing his fat ass going to eat it. Like, it don't matter where it comes from. You know he knows he's going to eat it. But he likes to ask 100 questions. I have cussed him out so many times at restaurants. Because he goes overboard with it.
I'd want to know. What do you mean?
You'd want to know.
Yes! I'd eat it anyway.
I'm trying to remember if he asked if we were ordering real Danish chicken. I don't think it came
That's
up.
That's weird.
But, you know.
It's weird, dude.
That's a little weird.
There was some real Danish liquor involved, I will say
I just want to know if it's like the government trying to kill you chicken or like chicken from somewhere good. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I care enough to ask questions.
God,
I
do.
Really
I'm
don't.
A little mentally That's ill, though.
You know what I would love to do is go to Waffle House and be like, are the waffles fresh?
I can tell you no.
Are these free range waffles?
The fucked up thing, I've heard him do this, though. Like, at places like that. Knowing, like, okay, I'm going to be as nice as I can about this. If you see somebody that looks, like, skinny, and he's asking you, no, I don't mean this in a bad way. You obviously take care of yourself. You skinny, you ain't like the rest of us.
Yeah,
a little
does.
Skinny.
Definitely not like me.
But if you were to see somebody that looked like skinny, and they came in a restaurant, and they asked 100 questions about the food, you're like, oh, this guy's a health nut. He's really watching what he puts in his body. You see somebody that looks like me, Chili Dog, or Lee Tucker.
Damn right.
We're asking if it's
I don't give a flying fuck.
All of a sudden, that question is just like, really? You're concerned with it being free range? You better be concerned with diabetes.
Like,
don't worry about where the chicken came from.
The only question I got is it free? Not ranged, but free.
That's why I love you. I have to tell people all the time because, like, Chili is somebody that I had no idea who they were until I started coming up here. Well, all of y'all, pretty much. But I get to go see y'all shows and hang out with y'all. Some of y'all play the rounds and stuff. Chili's one of those that's like, this dude is funny. He's super talented. And I'm like, why the fuck is he not doing more? But then you hear stuff like that, and you're like, I get it.
And you see how much I drink, and that's why.
I know Chili from TikTok.
My favorite, Chili and I were playing, what was it, General Horseplay down in Key West in January. And I said, you know, someday Paducah's going to say that Chili Dog's from here. And he just looked at me and said, they already do. Excuse me.
It's funny to me. I was even like, when Missy and Cam got here, I was like, hey, wait till you meet Chili. Like, he's so much fun. He doesn't care about social media. Like, he's just somebody that's just being Chili. And that's what I love so much about you. I have to do stupid shit. I had to post that Morgan Wallen shit today.
You loved it. Don't ask that me was did fun. Not like it.
That was fun now.
I just laughed watching the video.
It was all your idea, for the record.
Oh, you know, whenever I saw that, I thought to myself, this has Josh Terry written all over it. And he'll deny it. He'll deny
no,
it.
No, no,
check
I
his notes on his phone. It's all his.
Well, it's funny to me when you get to do stuff like that, but all of us have to do shit for social media.
Yeah, you do.
That you don't necessarily want to do, but it's a necessary evil.
Yeah.
And you it's like to. Every once in a while you get something that gets dropped in your lap, and you're like, I get to mess with Morgan Wallen. And I like Morgan Wallen. I like his music. I would be lying if I said I didn't. But I tell people all the time, like, if I was given money or I was given success at a young age, I would have Johnny Manziel'd the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And so, like, I hear shit that he's doing, and it's like, I'd have done it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd have thrown a fucking chair off top of the roof, but I've thrown somebody's phone off the top of another roof.
Yeah.
Onto a different roof.
Yeah, I don't know where that fucker went, but I threw the shit out of it.
Did y'all see Ernest's
video? I witnessed
video?
That. Oh,
it was so good.
Nailed it.
Was he there?
Crushed it.
Yeah, he threw it off the roof of Dierks Bentley, so I witnessed that. Just saying.
He's getting closer and closer to making me want to date him with all his felonies that he's racking up.
How many you got to have to contend?
Well, he only got...
well, he only got three. I think Cassidy's got like seven more to go till he like appears attractive.
Our friend Nikki T, I was talking to him the other day, and you know me, if I'm talking, I'm talking about men. And he goes, sis, I just think it'd be so good if you had a no felony rule. And I'm like, shit, I can't get one that's got all his teeth or not a DUI. I'm struggling on that.
Chili's
out of here.
I didn't even know he was getting up, and I was like, man, he's a happy motherfucker right now.
He's saying I got a chance.
Skinny's already. God.
Your dating qualifications are the same to work at Waffle House.
It's so
great.
Hey, I don't like, look, if I see a dude out and I look at him and I think I can beat him up, you think I'm going to date that? Like, uh-uh. I'll be getting into trouble. I need someone that can beat some ass because I'm going to be up there causing havoc. So I need someone to either like scoop me up and take little Gretchen away, or I need someone to
beat
some ass.
One of my favorite things you have done. When you stunned Mark?
Oh, when I tased him?
Tased him.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I'm
was y'all there for that?
Hold the phone.
So I get drunk and I like to play with my taser.
The vicious giggle in that video.
Look, I'm from Florida, man. Like.
And Mark Ori looks like he should have been from Florida.
So. I get
Mark
drunk
Ori
and I want to play with my
carded
little...
for buying Mucinex at Kroger. Like, I can't get over his life.
So. Oh, you know what the best part before she tells this? Y'all know who Kimberly Atwood is, right? Yeah. How sweet and just monotone.
Answer.
I love Kimberly Atwood so much. We were doing a podcast like this one night, and it's me, Mark, Lee, and her, and we've all been drinking whiskey. I think Skinny had
one
just
of my favorite
left.
Stories ever.
Skinny just left, and we're just having fun.
I'm still there.
Bullshitting. And Kimberly, because she lives in her van, she went and warmed up a Subway sandwich or whatever in the microwave and sitting there eating in front of us. She don't even have the mic in front of her no more. She reaches over and grabs Lee Tucker's mic and puts it in front of her. And just out of nowhere, she's like, you know what, Mark? You look like you either do or sell meth. Your name from now on is Meth Mark.
Methy Mark.
And I'm telling you, me and Lee, shit, I've never laughed so hard. Whenever like one of y'all sweet, innocent ones say something like that, this is like, Mark, you knew, like, I would card him too, was the point of that. If he was buying Mucinex, Benadryl, whatever, I'm checking to see if he's sick
well,
or not.
Well, my favorite part of the story was he was like, oh, well, like, how old do you have to be to buy Mucinex? And they were like, 14.
You just got to look like you're not going to make meth. That's all it is.
They're Sudafed up.
You know how many times he's... You know how many times he's played one of our riders' rounds and,
he's always on the late slots, dude. Like, it's always him, Ryan Nelson, and some other degenerate.
Well,
and they're there.
he usually plays like whenever he does it, but before every time, he tells me, bitch, you better not call me Meth Mark in front of like all these people. Like, he's self-conscious about it.
Well, but he also comes up with amazing nicknames for other people.
Oh, yeah.
That's
the best. Like, you all know Chris Andrucci?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's Scottish.
Foreign
and
Wallen.
So, Mark, yeah, Mark calls him Foreign Wallen.
We got t-shirts in the making, don't worry.
I got a video that I have to show y'all, and I'm not going to say the other guy's name, but Mark and me were having a really good time one time, and there was somebody playing, and he starts doing some fucked up shit, like acting like the singer on stage, and he makes up a name for them, and it's like, what was it? It was like Hardly. Or
No, we were in Red Door.
It was bad.
I know exactly
and
what
I'm
this was.
Telling you, I was about to piss
I can't really
myself.
Say this because I love going to that bar, but I know exactly what this was about, and it was this stage.
Yeah.
Because I remember when he said this nickname.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm just like, Mark, you don't care. But anyway, you tased the shit out of him. That's
just call
better.
Me old Stun Gun Sally, I guess. I don't
Done. We're writing that.
Girl, I will write that. Listen, I like getting drunk.
I want in. I'm
going
to write
if I ain't got nothing else going on, I'm like, hey, y'all want to go out and play with my Zappy boy? And they're like, what the hell is that? I'm like, you want to find out?
That means something completely different with Missy.
It does.
Oh, go ahead, girl.
My Zappy toy is a lot different.
Go ahead, girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you from Florida?
I'm not. But I like recording my Zappy boy.
Okay, girl.
Like I said.
You can't say that without context. You got to.
You get it.
I'm scared. I actually don't.
She does a valued profession. She's been like our OnlyFans girl of the month the past
Slay.
Couple months. She's awesome. So when she says Sometimes. Zappy boy, it's a different Zappy boy.
Yeah.
I come off.
Want to play with my Zappy boys? Because they're pretty fun.
It's going to be about 5 minutes are going to pass, and I'm going to get it. And I'm going to be like, I'm actually so stupid sometimes.
If you don't get this one, I am
Let's
concerned.
I am too out. Now. I'm scared.
Hippy dippy.
Oh, hippy dippy redneck.
Oh, hippy dippy shit good.
That shit's fire.
Oh, my God. Here I am. I'm like, hey, guys, I do music. They're like, we don't give a shit. Hey, guys, I'm talking about something in my car. Oh, my God. People think it's revolutionary that I've got wind chimes on my porch. And then I sit on my porch and listen to drama. And here I am. I'm like, hey, listen to my music. They're like, mm-mm. The more videos of you talking in your car.
It's real weird. I was just talking to them about this earlier. Like, coming from radio to what I do now, all I want to do is just fucking do this. Mm-hmm. I never had to do my own marketing and stuff before. Mm. But then you realize, like, damn, I know people are going to listen, but I have to make an ass out of myself on social media to get them to go to it instead
it's
of just
awful.
Putting the context of what I do.
Yeah. I have to tell people all the time, like, most people who do, well, anything on social media, you have to follow the trends. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's making yourself look like an idiot. Sometimes it's just completely a character, something you don't agree with, something that's going to be controversial. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, they're going to get mad about it. But unfortunately, that is what sells.
So do you want to know what I did when I launched? Because I only launched my podcast, like, March 20th. So it's only been, like, a month. And I was like, I don't have a big following, but I really want people to listen. And when I moved to Nashville, I've just been here a year, and I drink a lot. I'm social and I met a lot of people. So I just have like random phone numbers of like, yeah, we should hang out. Like girls, guys, just like, oh, yeah. Just met you. Just, you know, you just meet so many people in Nashville all the time. So I have all these phone numbers that like you never text them the next day. You just like connected. So sometimes I had their name, sometimes I didn't, whatever. Like, I had one that just said, Red Door Unknown. Like, that was how I saved it. Like,
we got about four of those.
Yeah. We all have that number saved in our phone.
Yeah. I got a few of those. You.
Yes. So it was just a whole bunch of random. So I literally went through all of my contacts and everyone I texted in the last year, and I just, like, sent them the podcast link.
Smart.
Like, I just.
Smart.
And Brilliant. Surprisingly, like, people were like, well, most, like, more. The girls were liking it, but mostly the men were listening and like, wow, we have a lot in common. Or like, well, one guy was just like, I didn't really listen, but I like your raspy voice. But I'm like, all right, we got something.
Oh,
I mean, it's a stream.
Whatever floats
your
boat.
But I was just like, this is what I'm trying to do just to even like get it out to people. Just text. And if they share it with anybody else.
You have to be creative. You really do.
And then, but the funniest story is that, and I probably won't. But I literally sent it to a guy I met in Knoxville. I went to Knoxville random, like, December 2020, to meet this other guy I met in Nashville. It was a whole random thing. But I met one guy for 10 minutes at the bar, Sent him the podcast after it launched. Never saw him again. 10 minutes. He was telling me about his divorce. I got divorced. Then literally listened to the podcast. I sent it to him. Then he said, when's the next episode? I binged the whole thing. When's the next one?
Okay.
And I said, okay. So I said, Wednesday, you know, and I, then he said, come out into Knoxville. Come hang out. And I was like, so anyways, I talked to him on the phone for a long time, like 6 hours. Jesus. And then where was I this weekend? Knoxville. I didn't ask anything. I didn't even remember what he looked like. Didn't look at his socials. Didn't. Nothing.
Man, so, you better stop telling a lie. I ain't know why you went to Knoxville. I know what this fella looked like.
Swear. This
was
is
he cute?
Yeah, he was cute. This is me. I do everything for the plot. So I go there. I don't even know his address. I just start driving to Knoxville on Friday.
Still, oh, you're a psycho.
Okay. So I'm on my... No, he tells me, like, he wants me to come. I'm like, you know what? For the plot, I've got to...
For the plot.
Yeah.
That's it.
He hated that I was like, well, it's for the podcast. So I'm driving out. I'm talking to my girl on the phone. And I said, well, where do I need to go? He sends me his address. So I'm driving. I'm like at Bucky's. Stop. She's like, girl, he's like on the lake. Like, he has like a lake house. Like, I was like, oh, cool. I get there all weekend, lakefront view in Knoxville, go on his boat, do the whole.
You give a bitch a boat. And I didn't she ain't got to know what you look like.
One thing. I'm about to say he got a brother.
Yeah. You give a girl a boat and a beer and she's okay.
Yeah, I was drinking beer. He cooked all weekend, the whole time. I didn't even lift a finger. He made like chicken Alfredo, made burgers. I was like, well, I said, I woke up late. I go out there. He's fishing on his dock. And I'm like, well, this is like a dream. And then he was like, well, it's too late for brunch now. What would you have ordered? I said, oh, probably like an omelet or eggs Benedict. He made both of one of each.
See, I can do that, but I don't have a boat.
There's no way this guy's a Jeffrey Dahmer.
What life is this?
When's the wedding?
I don't know. I think
this is a major slay for the plot. I know. Just in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I just got back from Knoxville this morning. I stayed an extra night. I was like,
so you're still on that high of like,
no,
oh my God.
It was fun. I was like, I don't know. I was like, don't fall in love with me.
You listened to What a Man by Salt and Pepper the whole way home, because that's what I would have done.
First off, if I cook you eggs Benedict and you sit on my dock all weekend, bitch better be in love.
One letter could have changed it.
I ain't got no better game than that. That's all I got.
I mean, yeah, it was pretty impressive. That's why I'm not on that whole, like, men are, like, I talked about this, like, a lot of women now that I'm single because I was married, you know, are like, men are shit. I'm like, I don't know where these men are, but I'm not meeting them. Because, like, I'm meeting really good humans. Like, I don't know. I'm like, who's even, what movie is this on? You know what I'm saying?
Love,
like,
actually.
Who's even doing that? There's great men out there. I think we're just like, I think it's like a mindset. If you think there's men are shit, then you're going to meet shit men. If you think men are great, then you're, you know what I mean?
Well, because it's just when you...
My daddy was the best man in the world, so I can't think men are bad.
That part.
You know?
Well, it's fair just enough. With most of us, totally is when you meet us. It's like every one of us have potential to be a piece of shit or a really good dude. And it's what time of my life did you meet me?
I think that's just called being a human. Yeah. I think we all have that potential.
I agree.
Yeah, but the problem with, like, most of us is we are, like with me, I couldn't have been around y'all or just been friends with you guys 10 years ago before my daughter. Mm. I would have made a lot of shit awkward. Yeah. And I'm serious. Like, I would have. But now, as an adult,
that's funny. That's
and
good
after
way to put
seeing
that.
How, like, people treat my... Not necessarily my daughter, but you start looking at how men treat other women too. And it's like, I don't want that to be Grace one day.
Yeah.
So it starts to where you learn those lines. And it's like, okay, I don't want to do that. Yeah. Like, I don't want to make shit weird. Like, I can just be your friend and bullshit with you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys, they don't know that until they get there. Yeah. So I think there's more men that are like actual pieces of shit and give most of us a bad name.
You
than there are women that
me.
Are the invert.
I think there's, like, such thing, too, is, like, girlies, like, back me up on this or tell me to shut the hell up, whatever. I think there's, like, such thing as reverse daddy issues, which means, like, my dad and my pawpaw are, like, the best men that I've ever known
so
in my life.
So you hold every man to that standard.
I hold every man to that standard. And, I mean, my dad is, like, 27 years special forces, badass, overtook third world countries. Oh, my God. Reverse daddy issues is a thing because, like, how am I supposed to, one, like, I'm just telling you, I go up and I see these men. I'm a strong personality. And, you know, if I see some dude that I'm like, I can beat you up, I'm not attracted to it. But my dad is such a provider and a protector. I'm like, that standard is going to be so hard to beat for, like, these youngins coming up. I'm like, what the hell?
No, you know what? I take your reverse daddy issues and I call it high standards.
Oh, yeah, and or I that. Think, and I forgot that was a thing.
You, and I, if you're too, like, I saw a thing, actually, that Lexi Liu, who you had on the other week, that Lexi
love
Liu
Lexi.
Posted the other day that was like, if someone says that you're too much, tell them to go off and find less.
And they do.
Uh-huh.
They will.
Well, it's just like with a bunch of y'all, too. I think we talked about it on that show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, y'all don't realize what it's like for men either. To deal with y'all, and I don't mean that in a negative way.
No.
Y'all are big personalities, and you're strong women. Mm. A lot of women in this world, especially like if they're not like have y'all's mindset that you're an artist, that you're an individual, that you know that you're a badass.
Mm.
It's a whole different thing dealing with them.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's also sometimes it's like, damn, I've got to act a certain way. But then when you find somebody like you guys, and it's like, oh, this is 50-50.
Right.
Because a lot of people want you to hold their hand. A lot of people, and like it's weird.
See, I was listening to a podcast recently, and they were talking about women today. Like, you can't have a strong personality because, and you're looking for men that are providing and protecting, and you know, taller than you, and makes you know more money than you, and all of these things. And I just could not relate. Like, I could not give a fuck about any of those things.
Bars
like,
and
I am independent. I'm strong. Mm-hmm. I can hold my own. Like, I want you know. All these other qualities, like honesty and communication and, like, real things that matter to me. But apparently there are women out there that care about cars and height.
A lot.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't relate to that.
I'm learning that because that's when she freaked out about the house. He was like, he could have told me because I don't live on the water, but I live by the water in Hendersonville.
Yeah.
And it came up when we talked on the phone. And he could have easily tried to, because that's what I'm learning from girls like, oh, he has this house,
like,
he has this
so
thing.
So weird to me.
So he could have said, I live on the water, but he never did. And he was like, you didn't even ask. I could have had the crappiest apartment.
Sure.
And you were still just coming.
Yeah.
And I think, like, when men realize that you need to kind of want to like who they are because things go away.
Yeah.
Like, his money can be gone.
Materialistic
really
values.
With any of us. Like, we could lose anything. It doesn't, like, that stuff doesn't matter.
I think, like, most girls don't really actually, like, there's a common misconception, especially, like, in the music world of girls really caring about a man that's going to be at their level, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was always told coming up, I've been doing this since I was 12 years old, and I've talked about boyfriends and stuff. You got to have someone that's at your level, and I never understood that because, I mean, to me, personally, like, money is not one of the things that's a turn on for me. It actually, if anything's a turn off because it sometimes means you're
like
a dickhead.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And I mean that lovingly, like, I think a lot of dudes are really afraid that girls are not going to like them unless they have money or unless they have some kind of status or something. And I wish that was, like, not the truth. I hear it from my guy friends. It makes me kind of sad.
It's at one point in time that dude got burned because he wasn't. And it's not even about being successful. As a lot of women do want you to be a provider. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being a provider. Like with me, I want to be able to wear, not you don't have a job, but I want you to be able to do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then your income is our income.
Sure.
My income's your income.
That's fair.
But I want to be able to provide for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of relationships I was in, especially when I was younger. I didn't have shit to offer. And the older you get, you realize, like, this person didn't have a reason to love me more. Because I couldn't do shit for them.
Right.
And then when that person burns you, at some point in time, you're like, well, goddamn, that's all they want. And that's not necessarily the case. But who wants to spend the rest of their life with somebody that right off the bat, you know that shit's going to be hard.
Mm.
But I also think it's not just like, of course, the masculine, like, providing is attractive. But for me, it's like the man being, like, passionate and excited about life. Like,
yes.
When you don't have a purpose and you don't have anything that you're
some
excited
kind of drive.
To do.
Drive
like,
is attractive.
Not attractive.
I agree 100%. Like, I think the sexiest thing in a dude is a hard work ethic. When they
Absolutely.
Love something and they're
Amen.
Going for
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
It is,
get
y'all, it is so
These boys are sitting over here like, fuck.
I'm just,
y'all say how you want to. I bust my ass.
Actually, yeah, all the boys in this room bust their asses,
yeah.
I will say.
No, really, well, because, look, the economy goes up and down. Things can go away, but when a man, like, loves his life and is driven and it's like, woof, okay, there we go.
Yeah. I think there's a difference between providing and providing, like, security and ambition, and both of you, you know, providing that ability to grow together. Like, wherever you are, somebody's providing you support to grow in your own path. Somehow.
Yep.
I think that's so much more important.
Yeah, but in all honesty, though, you realize, like, everybody in this room is kind of unique in the way that we get to do what we love.
True.
And we do get have to bust our ass for it.
Sure.
Like, nothing in this room has been given to anybody.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But there are a
here.
Lot of people, they don't get to pursue their dreams. They don't
yeah.
get to pursue whatever. So that's kind of, it's kind of hard. Like, you can be passionate about something And it's just how you go about it. Like, all of us have decided to go for broke. Like, if we fail, we're going to fail our way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Fuck it. If I'm poor at the end of the day, at least I tried.
Yeah.
A lot of people are not like that. They're scared to be broke. They're scared to be homeless. They're scared to not fucking chase their shit.
They play safe. Yeah, they play safe. I don't know. I like that. It's adventure to me.
No, that's the scariest thing for me, because I did do the safe path, and I realized, and that's really what I kind of talked about on my podcast. Like, I had a really good corporate job that made a good salary, and I could have stayed doing that for a really long time. But I was not, like, in love with it. You know what I mean? So it's, like, just, like, the same idea of, like, being married to someone because of money or any other thing. It's, like, if that's not really what you love, it's never going to make you happy. Yeah. You're just going to be comfortable. And then what's that story? Like, what's your life?
Well, it's learning to live with complacent. Like, being complacent. And complacency isn't happiness.
Complacency isn't the same as being content.
Yeah.
There's, like, a difference, I think, between the two. And content is... difference. You're happy where you are, but you want to strive for better still. Complacency is you're not happy where you are, and you're just going to stick with it because it's safe.
Well, I think some of it, too, is getting rid of ego. Like, I mean, I think all of us probably in this room have done, you know, I think of all the odd jobs that I've done throughout the years of, like, cleaning Airbnbs, walking dogs, retail, cater waiter. You know, I've taken jobs where they're like, we can only pay you a $100 gas card. And I'm like, I will take the $100 gas card. Yep. Are you kidding me? Yeah. You know, and so there's also that sense of, like, you know, I had friends that were buying houses and I was accepting a $100 gas card to cater waiter. But, like, you know, it just, but I knew that that would facilitate me keeping doing the music. So I didn't. And I ran into, I actually remember that gas card night, and I was serving my friends. Like, I remember it, and I was like, I don't care, because tomorrow I get to go to a co-write.
I think there's something about, like, the personalities in this room in general, just adrenaline and creativity. Like, we're okay to, like, claw our way to the top, because it's exciting.
You have to have that mentality.
You
have to be so comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's where it doesn't even feel uncomfortable to us anymore. Like, if one of y'all go into a write, and you're unfamiliar with the person, when you first did it, you were like, oh, man, I don't know. What the fuck am I going to say? Or, like, if I throw an idea out there, they're going to think I'm stupid and never want to write again. And then, like, later on, you're like, they've had stupid ideas. Like, there's no way they haven't. So I can say whatever I want to. It's when you're around people that get artists and they get creative. Like, being around creative people, it makes you better because you stop forcing down your creative side. And there's not enough people that have got past that uncomfortable. When you get past that uncomfortable, that's when that good shit happens.
I think that just comes with learning how to be secure with yourself too, though. Knowing yourself and being self-aware, because if you're secure with yourself, even in uncomfortable situations, you're trying something new, like, you're gonna like win, you might fail, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't change who you are or anything like that.
Vulnerability.
You're still gonna move forward.
I think you have to stop looking at stuff as failures, though.
Yeah, fair.
I don't think there's failures in this world. Mm-mm. I think you have a person, regardless of who you are, you have the mindset of, am I going to succeed because I learned a lesson from me not doing well, or am I a victim because I failed? Like, it's okay. Like, use it as a stepping stone. Like, you went to school to learn how to do things right. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's just like life. Like, you have to learn how to do things right. And the only way you know how to do things right is if you fucked up and did it wrong in the first place.
Try it.
I think it's a lesson. Every time it's like something better is waiting. It's almost like I think of life like going up this mountain. It's like if you thought you had this mapped out and you were going to do all these things and you were going to go up this certain trail, it's like, well, that trail is closed or you can't go that way. So it's directing you to a better path. Like, what are you going to do? Stand there and worry about the fact that you didn't get to go down that side where you thought you were going? It's like,
just be flexible.
No, go see what's ahead. Like, you'll still get there.
But that's the creative mentality I was thinking. Like, it just doesn't hurt our feelings to pivot. Like, that's we have to. We can't sit there and be sad about it. Like, there's no reason
You don't have time.
No, we don't have time. We're trying to win.
We're trying to get a gas card tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah.
We got to get things moving.
Take a look
hey, man.
Card, let's go.
Hey, man. That's money.
When you're your business, like, you're the reason why you make money. Regardless if it's a podcast, a songwriter, a singer, or whatever, you get to the point where, like, you don't have time to sit there and wallow in your pity if something goes wrong. We all know the people that do. And every time that we're around them, we're like, you realize why you suck? It's because you allowed yourself to keep sucking.
Oh, it's so draining to be around those types of people. Like, honestly, you want to be supportive and empathetic, but you got to close your circle a little bit tighter because they'll bring you down.
Yeah,
really
misery loves company.
There's no reason to have a plan B if you make plan A work.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or plan A point one.
Plan A has like plan multiple A Sims two. Too. Yeah. Like I think I have this theory. I don't know if y'all are going to agree with me or not. I think that everyone who is really good at what they do in like the creative world is a little bit like mentally ill, you insane. Because be think about spectrum. It. Yeah, like I was literally.
Nobody
right?
in their right
Nobody's
mind chooses
that.
Right?
I was that. I'm hardcore diagnosed on the spectrum.
Right?
So.
I talk, I play at this country club in town, and it's like where the richest of the rich in Nashville live. And I've always, because I came from nothing, I've always had this fascination with just people with money because I've just never been around it a lot. And it really, insane. it makes me nervous, you know? So oh, yeah. I was around. Right. Well,
she,
I went.
She just said she wanted to be around the poor. It's what she did.
Well, it just makes me nervous being around people with a lot of money, you know, being from small town in Appalachia. And I had dinner with these people one time. They was real sweet, and they offered me up to have dinner with them. And they were talking, and they were just totally the other brand type of people that weren't in music. They made all their money doing something technical, you know. And they said, well how do you?
Decisions.
Yeah, they did. They went to college. And they asked me, they said, you know, what type of person do you think it takes to do what you're doing? And I said, it takes somebody fucking crazy. I said, what is the logic? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different outcome. And that's what we do every day as songwriters, is we literally write something every day praying to whatever that it's going to make a difference and do something good. I mean, that's literal insanity. On top of that, who are we to get on stage as just like normal people and pretend that we're this larger than life entity? We're, you know, people in the crowd. We want them to think, you know, we're stars or whatever. Mm-hmm. What? That's so crazy that we do that.
Bette Midler likes to say that, like, to be in the arts, you have to think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread while also knowing you're not.
That's a very good, eloquent way to say it.
Regardless of what you do, y'all know the story of 409?
So amazing.
The spray bottle? You have to view yourself as 409. 409, do you know why it's called that?
Mm-mm.
They got the formula wrong 408 times.
Oh, hell yeah.
Before they got
about
it right.
Choked on my beer.
About 409.
So, like, you literally, you're not ever going to be successful.
I love that.
Until you are.
I'm about to cry over cleaner.
But,
can we go buy some support in
that? Yeah. But that's literally it. Like, you're never going to be where you want to be until you're there. We had a show with Justin Andrews and Ryan Nelson, and that didn't go off the tracks at all.
God.
Ryan Nelson, if you're hearing this, you're probably still talking while everybody else is. I love him so much.
Florida man.
But, like, I gave them the example during the show, and you, if you think about it, you got to think about the person that you idolize the most in country music, or like with me, I idolize Joe Rogan and Tom Segura and people like comedians and stuff. Mm-hmm. If it took, let's just say a Chris Stapleton, if it took Chris Stapleton 20 years to get acknowledged and that's who you look up to, you have to be okay with it taking you just as long.
Mm-hmm.
If that's your hero, if that's your icon, whoever it is, if it took them that long, then it's okay. You're in the process. It's mm-hmm. not giving up to get there. If Chris Stapleton would have gave up before anybody paid his ass attention, we wouldn't know Chris Stapleton. Yeah. There's a lot of people out there right now that stopped.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't keep going, and you're like, why the fuck didn't you keep going?
Well, really talented.
I will say, like, to be completely fair too, like, I'm not one to like pull this card because I just think it's bullshit usually, but I will say there was a time in Nashville where, you know, men could do so much at 30 and 40 years old and totally get all the recognition that they deserved or that they worked for. I remember when I first moved to Nashville or started coming to Nashville about 7-8 years ago, the cutoff date for record labels signing women was 26 years old. If a woman was 26 years old, you weren't going to get it. And I remember seeing Lainey Wilson when she was doing her speech for the Grammys. Mm-hmm. She said, a 30-year-old woman's up here. And I felt that. When she said that in her voice, I felt it. Because, I mean, there's so much. I remember coming here. I moved here when I was 16 years old. And I was like, I'm already 16. Instead of saying I'm only 16.
Yeah.
Mm.
And now it's changing for the better, I think. But that is also something that you gotta be worried about.
Well, here's my thing with it though. Like anything like as far as age goes, I'm 36. I didn't know who I wanted to be until I was 28 years old. I didn't start driving and trying to do what I wanted in life until I was 28 years old. Yeah. You can't tell me there's not people out there that have heard that same thing and been like, fuck, I'm too old. but they're some of the most talented people. Exactly. That you have to get past it. Mm-hmm. Like, just because, and shout out to my guy, y'all please go vote for Will Mosley on American Idol.
Yes.
There's a cutoff on age on Idol now. Yeah. You're telling me that
there's always
the
been
most
one.
Talented
really?
People?
Since the first season, it's 27 years old.
Yeah, and it's like, why? Why are we cutting off people that were just so scared to ever get up there and do it? Why?
And I think the stories get better. Like, I feel like I love, like, the songs that make me, like, weep like a small child or just dance. Like, anything that I'm going to have, like, a really just, like, organic primal reaction to is authenticity.
Yeah.
And when you have lived life and you've made mistakes and you've been in weird relationships and you've gone through stuff, you're point blank, you're going to have a better story to tell. Yeah. And those are the stories
relatable.
I want to listen to.
Yeah.
And it gets more interesting. And so it's like, I think in that sense, age should be celebrated because then you have more
Absolutely.
Interesting stories to tell. Like, Absolutely. I want to tune into that.
Could you imagine if there was a cutoff date for songwriting?
God.
It would be awful. Like, what?
So my best things I've ever written was going through my divorce. I think that was like the biggest time that I've ever even been that creative and like, I mean, I've always written as, like, therapy, but that was, like, I don't know. It just feels like a whole new world. Yeah.
It'd just
know?
Be party songs. I mean, if it was all the Young Guns. I mean, that's what I was writing when I was first coming up. Sure. And, I mean, I got some mileage under my belt in relationships, and I realized, well, I got a lot more to say than that. And then I got scared of it, and then I went back to party songs.
Is it Vern Gosen who didn't start till he was, like, 40?
Uh-huh. 38.
Yeah. And it's like,
I think Liz Rose was in her 40s.
Liz Rose was 40. My boss was 40 years old when she, I think, signed her first pub deal.
Yep.
Well, it was like one of the first shows that we did up here was with Creative Vets.
Mm.
And I love working with them. We got a golf tournament. Me and Cole's playing in with them in a couple weeks.
Are you guys good?
Josh, we've played golf before, right?
Yeah. Are you good?
Okay, I was just making sure you knew. You asked me to be on your team. I was just making sure you knew you'd see me play.
Are you a good golfer?
Last year you asked me. It might be a one and done kind of deal.
No. He's not having a mic right now. David McMahon up there almost killed Mitchell Tenpenny last year, and I figured if we could get away with that.
I'm going to need the whole story. What happened?
Okay,
hold the phone. Rewind. We need the full story.
David's
here.
Like super strong.
Should we let David tell it from his side, or should we let Josh?
I know he's not much, but can he get up and like walk on the
version of David's story?
He hit a ball like a good drive in golf is like 200 plus. A really good guy drive is like 300 plus. David hit a ball that went 100 yards straight and 7,000 yards to the left, and just so happened that when it went left, because he hit it so fucking hard. Mitchell Tenpenny is getting out of his golf cart.
No.
And it hits in the golf cart, and it rattles. And I swear to you, if that ball would have hit him, we wouldn't have Mitchell Tenpenny. I'm telling you. That was, but also, too, one of the scariest moments of my life. Last year was my second year playing in that, and you're, like, around people that you idolize. Like, my ass don't even know how I've got to where I can be there, but I'm literally on the driving range, and standing in front of me is Vince Gill. And Vince Gill to me is one of that's one of the ones that's in my head.
Yeah.
That Vince Gill, like, if you can have a handshake and talk to Vince Gill, that's better than a paycheck to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I just love him so much. And I shank a ball. He is literally standing in front of me. I hit it with the top of my driver. It goes up about 20 feet and it drops in front of his little thing there, and I have to be like, I'm sorry, Vince. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to do this at all. Please don't judge me on this.
Did you end up out driving him though?
I probably outdrove him the rest of the time, but that right here, I'm telling you, shit. I've never been, whatever. But Creative Vets, to get back to what I was saying with them about the songwriting stuff. Growing up, I used to love writing poetry. But I was an athlete too. So like I think in like seventh or eighth grade, I got a poem that was published in like Young Poets of America. And of course, where we're from, like school announces it, all that shit and everything, right? Well, I'm also playing baseball at the time. So like everybody on the baseball team is like, oh, you fag, you're writing poetry.
Yeah.
And like all this kind of stuff. And I loved it. Like I loved it. And I never wrote anything again. Like I got picked on so hard because of it, never wrote again. And I told that to the guys from Creative Vets. And they were like, have you ever like tried to write a song or anything? And I was like, no. I was like, I don't. Like, I don't know nothing about it. Can't play the guitar. I have no musical talent. Like, the good Lord knew better to make me where I can sing because I would have abused the shit out of it.
You'd have been a little skinny.
I would have owned stock in Plan B if I could sing. I'm just going to be real. Like, I would not have been a good human being. I know that I wouldn't, and God knew that. Why he didn't give it to me? We were both on the same page. Yeah. But they were like, hey, why don't you, like, try to do some of this stuff with us or whatever for a little bit? And I was like, okay, this is fun. And it made me to where, like, I got comfortable. Mm-hmm. To where, like, hey, maybe this is a decent idea. Maybe it's not. Every once in a while, I'll throw something to my friends, and they'll be like, that's fucking stupid. But every once in a while, they're like, that's not bad. But, like, with Vern or anybody else, like, you don't know that being creative is okay. You don't know that the way that you think is okay until other people give you that reassurance. And if there's not enough people out there, like, giving reassurance with that stuff that it's okay to be different, you are stuck in this box the rest of your life, and it sucks.
I was, like, I saw a podcast that was talking about, I think it was Lauren Watkins, and I don't know her, but it was kind of, I think, I forgot whose pod it was on, maybe like 10 Year Town or something. But they said that, which I noticed out here, because I'm always cheering for everyone. Like, I'm a fangirl. Like, I have another incident that I just, like, find artists, and if I love their songs, like, I love the lyrics, mm-hmm. the melody, all of that. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of talking about, they were, or no, it was Bobby Brown's, saying, like, you get with other artists in a room, and they, I never thought of this, and then they don't want to, like, cheer you on because there's like maybe internal like envy, like, oh, they're doing better than me, or that kind of a thing. And I never really like thought about that because I've always just been like for everybody, but even in my previous career, so I never really thought that could be like an insecurity too, though. Like, you want people to win, but you're like internally like everyone's the competition.
Oh, I'm the worst for that. I'm so bad for that. I'm so competitive.
I think the music world is good about friendly competition. Everybody wants everybody to win, but everybody also wants to do well themselves. Yeah. I think from what I've seen so far, and I've been really blessed, is that people have been good to me. I try to be good to other people. So I don't know.
Well, I will say, I think the way Nashville has it set up is good because it's like if you're in the room, you get credit. As far as songwriting goes, yeah. Other cities are not like that. LA is not like that. And I think in the songwriting world, and because songwriting and artistry are so interconnected in Nashville, I think it ends up serving the city because you want, when you're in the room and everyone's getting an even cut, you're not worrying about ego and, well, I want my line to make it so I get paid my 25% or whatever. Yeah. You're just trying to serve the better of the song. And I think that that ends up sort of like reverberating to the rest of like the city, where like I have seen people get run out of town because they can't hang and they can't collaborate and they won't whatever. It's like if you're not willing to hang and like hear other people out and honestly sit and have a good time and just make some goddamn art, you're not gonna make it here. Sorry, like their collaboration at the end of the day is what feeds Nashville, and it's one of my favorite things on the planet.
Well, it's everything though. This, even like me and Missy. Like, we've done some shit on social media, like promoting a podcast, promoting her social media stuff and everything. And it's like, there's some people that are scared to do that with other people. It's like, who's going to outshine the other one or whatever? But they don't realize, like, at the end of the day, this benefits both of us. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't, there's not enough people that, you're supposed to have your self-interest. I talk about that on the show a lot. Like, you are supposed to look after yourself before you look after anybody else.
Of course.
Because that being the actual logic, you're going to look out for yourself before you look out for me. Mm-hmm. That's what you're supposed to do. And there's just not enough people that sit there and take a step back and say, you know what, let's do this for us. One thing that's with our group wherever we travel, and we've had people come, we've had people go, we've cut people out because it's not, to me, I'm not successful if the people I love about are not succeeding. Success to me is everybody coming along with me. And there's a lot of people that's like, no, I want to succeed. I don't want you to. Like,
yeah. That's crazy.
High tide raises all boats.
I want to succeed so I can bring others with me. I want to be able to hire people that, you know, like, the, all
like
that.
If I'm making it, everybody in this town's going to know because everybody I love is going to
gain 100. So much more love.
What's Chili Dog? Chili Dog's got something on his mind.
Yeah, I feel
mind.
Like Chili Dog's been trying to talk over all the white girls for
I'm
like an
sorry.
Hour.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
We do have a problem with that around here.
I'm sorry.
I was just thinking, like, I think that's why I got as far as I have in this industry. I just sit back and I'm willing to play for anybody. Yeah. Like, I'm not really a songwriter. I'm not my own artist. more. I do covers,
oh,
you
dude,
know.
You're so fucking good, though.
But
you're so.
Don't
good.
Discredit yourself. Yeah. I've seen you. I don't even know you.
Stop fishing for compliments.
Oh, no, man. I just the thing about me, I love to play music, and I'm here to play with multiple other amazing artists. So that's why I love coming to join Josh and everybody to hang out and see the other artists I've never met. Yeah. So that's just the way I think about it.
In my mind, it's if I believe that iron sharpens iron, and I do, the better you are, the better it's going to make me.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I want to be around good, successful people? Because you're going to make me better at whatever I do. I'm not scared that you might outshine me.
Right. I think that just comes with us, again, like I said, though, being secure, knowing that you're doing your own thing. You're trying to be successful doing your own thing. So why wouldn't you invite other people that are trying to do the same? Yeah. Like, I love being a hype girl. I will always bring people. But if you're trying to use me to, like, clout chasing or anything, like, you're out. Because I can tell you're not genuine, that you're not trying. That you're, you know, you're not trying to do your own thing.
I've lost so many gigs because I just, you know, I do all the beer shit, you know, and people just
iconic.
Think I'm trying to outshine them. I'm like, no, I'm just doing what I do. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just what
I'm just being you. But,
yeah.
But they're like projecting inside.
It shows, it shows that you're passionate and genuine, you know,
exactly.
That goes a long way.
You just happen to have like this one thing you cannot help. You're a star when people see you do all that shit.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of them, even my buddies that have had deals and other shit, that if their lead got more attention than they did, they didn't care who the fuck they had to replace them with. Like, you're somebody that steals the show. And it hurts you, but also at the same time, it's like, why wouldn't somebody that's super confident with themselves not want you on stage next to them?
Right.
You've dealt with a lot of insecure people.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows when you start playing, bro. You're good.
No, honestly, like, there's a Broadway choreographer, Ray Hesselink, who told me when I was right out of school, he was like, and obviously he was applying this to Broadway and the theater world, but it's entertainment. He was like, there's no such thing as competition if you think about it, because everyone is so different. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, either you're doing the best you can and practicing and whatever and getting out there and like playing shows and doing the thing, or you're not.
Yeah.
Like that's it. And he was like, look, like, you know, he was casting. I think he was doing the Billy Elliot musical at the time. And he was like, people come in for a chorus line. And by the time you make it to that level of Broadway auditions, you're the best in the field. He's like, I'm looking at 10 out of 10 on every single dancer, and it's an energy thing and whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so he's like, so just bring who the hell. And at that point I knew I was like going to not do the New York thing and come down to Nashville. But he was just like, you do you. Mm-hmm. Like, just go be good. Find other people who make you good. Stand beside the people who, and have fun too. Like, we have
be
the
yourself.
Best job in the world. Like,
we literally get to write
that's
songs.
That's the reason.
Friends.
Like, we get to. Play. If you're not having fun, like Cowboy, what was it? Cowboy Jack Clement was like, if you're not having fun, get the hell out of town. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, it's like then you're in the wrong business. But I always remembered Ray's words of like, there's not actually competition. Either you're doing the best you can, or you're not. The end.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's okay.
I was just thinking because that's like there isn't because they say there. I've read this thing that said like the only monopoly you have in this world is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you aren't really competing. You're the only you. So that's your uniqueness. So every time I have fear about anything, writing or I can't launch a podcast. Everyone has a podcast. It's like not everyone's you, Heather. Not everyone has your. Everyone's story is so different and unique. Everyone brings a different thing, a story and value. Yeah. So it's like. There isn't a competition. No one, I'm not competing.
There needs to be variety in everything.
Yeah.
Every field. Like, I could not listen to one musician for the rest of my life. I'm so grateful there
are different
genres.
Even like one genre.
Artists in those genres. And that's with everything. Like, we all need different viewpoints and, you know, like, just everything needs to have variety. So, really, there is no competition.
Yeah.
Like, just be yourself and stand out. And we need all of those things.
Yeah.
Well, you start thinking about competition as in you're competing with other people, but the real truth is you're competing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have I tell every artist that comes in the studio that whatever does anything with me is you have the chance to write an all-time great song. And every one of them's always like, why? Why do you think I can't? And it's because you're the only person that can tell your life story and turn it into music.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else is ever going to be able to write your story, whether it's a song, it's a book, it's a play, whatever. you have the ability to do that. And there's going to be so many people that resonate with you if you do you. Mm-hmm. If you start doing other people stuff and you start trying to be them, mm-hmm. then you got to tell their life story. You don't have first-hand perspective with that.
Yeah.
And it's, you're just going to fucking, you're going to go straight downhill yeah. and you're going to fall into this trap. There's so many people because of social media, and I have to sit there and I have to see how many likes you got. That's how many shares you got. I'm going to automatically yeah. be like, oh, fuck, I need to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Truth is, that's me doing that to myself. Nobody sat there and sent me a message or said anything to me to where I've got to do them.
That reminds me of you making that reel today. And I was like, just look at what everybody else is writing. And Josh is like, I'm doing this my own damn way, damn it. Like, well,
that's
my
motto.
My own thing.
And Josh, I know me and you've talked about this, but I live by the saying, nobody is better at being Cole Goodwin than I am.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Why would I be anybody else?
I like that.
Can your mics pick up the snaps?
I like that a lot.
That's like a really good one. Yeah. I was going to say, don't try to be a butterfly when you're a wasp. Like, you know, like, I'm thinking about bugs over here. Y'all getting so deep.
Here comes the hippie dippy.
Look, like, I think this is probably like your thing, Josh, too, because you said you were athletic in high school. Were you actually, were you joking? No, you were.
I'm like sneaky good athlete.
People are going to think I'm joking too, but like contrary to popular belief, I was pretty like athletic in school. Yeah. And like before I found music, I was doing softball and I was like doing stupid shit. Like when I was like 10 or 11 years old pitching like 75 miles an hour on whatever, like crazy. But my dad was also the coach too. So like I have this natural competitive. Yeah. I have this really, really natural competitive spirit, and it's not as much, you know, wanting to see who I can do better than. It's just, I want to even see if I can do what they do. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm real bad to see other artists and be like, oh, she's playing banjo. I want to play banjo. Yeah. Let me just see if I can do it. And it's, at the end of the day, it is competition with yourself. But could you also imagine if everybody was in the same lane, too?
Yeah.
Like, back in the day, you know.
It would be congested as fuck.
Yeah, back in the day, I thought about, like, you know, all the old country western bands. It was very much the same, you know, kind of swing beat, 6/8, you know, type waltz stuff, and everybody was kind of in the same
sound.
Lane. And then now it's expanded so much. We have the privilege of being in this time of having different lanes to compete with ourselves in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's like the coolest thing about being here. I don't know. Everyone wishes they were back in the olden days. I love being in this time.
Yeah, but we can make music like we're in the olden days if we feel like it.
Yeah. Exactly. Sierra Farrell, like prime example.
Yeah.
She's like my favorite.
I think when folks say that though, because I'm one of the ones that's usually pushing, hey, let's do more traditional shit. It's only because there's so many really talented people to get overlooked because there's people doing shit. And you're like, this isn't country. And like, I always have to say this. I don't think some of the shit's bad. I really don't. But like, I'll even say this, and I hate to bring it back up because I said it like on a couple shows recently. Mm-hmm. I don't think what Beyonce just came out with is horrible. I love her voice. I think she is one of the... Whenever she did that movie, Cadillac Records, and she does the Etta James stuff, oh, my God. I will listen to her do Etta James
all
day.
It's like my childhood.
But think about it like this. If you don't draw a line in the sand, you had somebody like Will Mosley who got the chance of a lifetime to have a number one. And the reason why he doesn't get a number one is because Beyonce's doing a gimmick album to where she's putting this stuff out. That shit hurts. And I think that that's just a small example of all my friends and some other people that I'm not close with here that are super talented. It's like, damn, they're doing the deal. Like, this is good shit. They don't get the attention, though, because of somebody that's got a couple million followers on social media putting out something, or somebody just going along and dropping whatever bullshit. Like, it's, you're not doing what all of us are passionate about.
Yeah.
It's not bad what you're doing.
Right.
I don't think so. Again, like, you can have, you know, do today's music or whatever, but I think at the end of the day, it comes down to respect and honoring the traditions of what, you know, and respecting your peers around you. So, like, you were talking about the Beyonce thing, like, she knows what she's doing, and she's, you know, she's always going to top the chart wherever she's at. Mm. And it does seem a little bit selfish because all these other people who are incredibly talented have been clawing their way to get there are not going to get there now. It's not necessarily her fault, but it is a respect in any industry that you need to understand, you know, especially if you're a bigger person with a bigger following, that the moves you make could hurt other people. So it's not necessarily always, you know, staying back in the past, but it's respecting, you know, all those around you and respecting the traditions of how, you know, how it all works.
If you're told that we have to respect everybody else's cultures, regardless of I'm not trying to make that a race thing for any of you assholes. I'm saying this like from genres of music to whatever. If we're told that we're supposed to respect other people's cultures, us as country music fans, aren't we supposed to have a little bit of respect thrown our way?
Well, and I think a great example of that would be like Chapel Heart, and there you can have him, Jolene.
They're so good.
I mean, they're so good. I mean, just they just bring down that. Like seeing them live, I saw them at Wild Horse, and I just like almost fell over the balcony. I was like,
they're
oh,
so
God.
Good.
You know, so I think there's, well, and I think one of the things that country music has always, I think one of the things that separates country from bluegrass, frankly, is that bluegrass stays purist, and I think country has always tried to dance the dance of adapting and progressing through the era.
Yeah, this isn't the first time that they veered.
Like, right, yeah. But I will say what's always stayed consistent in country music is the storytelling.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is my favorite thing about the genre, because honestly, even as a banjo player, like, I won't, even though I'm trained in Scruggs style, I won't call myself a bluegrass picker per se, because I will throw banjo on a rap song. Like, yeah. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I think it is, I just think it is such an amazing, stunning instrument. But like, the bluegrass purist culture is just that. And that has its place too. And I love going to Station Inn and hearing, I mean, it's such a high. But I think what's been interesting is to see the two genres sort of like balance that. But again, I think one thing that as country has changed over the decades, it's still held fast to that songwriting tradition of storytelling. Mm-hmm. But again, that's where like Chapel Heart comes in, where it's like, yes, I'm in.
They're so good. I have a hot take about that. So like, everyone was so like tore up about Beyonce coming into country music one way or another. They was tore up about it. I love the record. I think it's a badass track. Mm-hmm. And you know what? She literally says it in her songs. People forget, like, she did stuff with the Chicks before. Mm-hmm. And she said in her literal song, my daddy, what is it? My daddy, Alabama, my mom, Louisiana. Like, she has just as much of a right to be making country music as anybody else out there.
Okay, I don't disagree with you on that. But we've all heard her. We know how good she sounds, right?
It's unfair that she's that good.
Yeah, I mean, she's fucking amazing. Like, you'll never
She's so good.
Wouldn't you have wanted her? If she was going to come out with a country album, wouldn't you want to hear her do some of our favorite ballads?
Yeah.
Maybe rearrange them just a little bit. But let's just take Everything Glitters Isn't Gold. Wouldn't you want to hear her do
Or like Broken Wing.
Yeah, wouldn't you want to hear her do that? And
I don't
not
know.
See, the problem with me with that album is you want to call it a country album, whatever. Make it sound like a country album. That wasn't even a country album.
She didn't say it was a country album, did she, though? She said,
she
said this isn't a country album, it's a Beyonce. My thing is, what I have a problem with, and
Beyonce does country.
Like, y'all can hate me or not about it, but this is what I think. You know, we were talking about appropriation.
Yeah.
I moved from Kentucky down to South Florida, West Palm Beach, when I was 13, 14 years old. And I come down from Kentucky. I grew up in Appalachia, and I had, you know, the accent that I have, and I loved country music, and nobody did. And I think about all the times, you know, that I was ridiculed for being who I was, having cowboy boots, wearing cowboy boots to school, being country. And now all those people that used to make fun of me are wearing cowboy boots and going to country concerts, and they love Morgan Wallen. And, I mean, I love Lainey's song, Country's Cool Again, but, like, where's the appropriation on that? You know, nobody ever talks about how much you're ridiculed. I've seen it with my mother. My mother is one of the most intelligent people I've ever heard speak, but because she has a Southern accent, she's immediately degraded to being a redneck from Appalachia.
Can I ask you something about that, though?
Mm-hmm.
If you were told tomorrow that the cool thing to wear was to wear Converses, parachute pants, whatever, would you do it just because it was cool?
I think that it's like that fine line between appropriation of what it is, like what you're doing and what you come from, versus appreciating the culture. There's appropriation, then there's appreciated. I think Beyonce is appreciating country music in her own weird way. Like, we're looking at it because we're not used to seeing someone coming into country music being, one, that freaking talented, two, being, like, so incredible about it.
My thing is, like, you know, there's different artists there. You know, it's not just Beyonce. You've got Post Malone. You got Young Gravy all coming out with country albums. You have all these people that they've realized that the biggest thing that Zach Bryan and Morgan Wallen have commercialized country music and the folk music so much that everybody wants a piece of the pie. Everybody's wanting to come into
That's it.
And so everybody's trying to find their way to stay relevant and make it that, because country's become the new pop. It is what it is.
Yeah. It's funny how when me and a dude talked about this on the show recently, It's funny how growing up that a bunch of us that wore boots, that wore blue jeans and all that kind of shit our whole lives, that listened to a certain type of music our whole life, we got used to called trash. Mm-hmm. And we used to, like, one of my buddies says on this show, you remember when you get in somebody's car when you still had an aux cord and you ask them what they wanted to hear and they said anything but country?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, now,
all they want to hear
mm-hmm. is country. Yep. And it's like, okay, I get that, but there are some of us actually grew up wearing boots, grew up listening to George Jones, grew up loving traditional country. Mm-hmm. And I just want the heart and soul of that to stay to where people still feel comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
I don't mind change. Mm-hmm. You had, Travis Tritt's one of my favorites of all time. I think he's one of the most underrated fucking artists ever. But he put a whole lot of Southern rock and blues in his stuff. He wasn't doing traditional
country. Hank Jr. as well.
Yeah. And it's exactly. And it's like, it's okay to change. Their songs didn't change. They wasn't playing into a gimmick. They were being being themselves.
I think that's what, I mean, I'm on the outside of all this. I can't really relate to it all.
You're
but,
in it more than
but
you think.
But from where I sit, like, I don't care. Like, I think all those songs are great. Like, Beyonce's album, whatever. Like, I'll do your thing. But I personally see it as, you know, because I did grow up traditional country, and I do feel like the people who I've been, you know, rooting to succeed for so long, like these underdogs, are getting like trampled on. Their money's getting trampled on. Their viewership's getting trampled on, and they're trying their hardest. They don't have all of these resources, and those people who are, you know, making those waves right now are just gonna move on because they don't live in the country.
Yeah,
world.
I feel
like it's messing with the industry for a minute. They're gonna move on, and we're all gonna be left in the dust. And y'all are, you know, you got to start clawing your way back up.
Yes.
That's how I see it.
Right. Yes and no. My opinion on it, to kind of finish my thought, is that all these people coming in wanting a piece of the pie that aren't, you know, traditional country artists, it kind of gets that fine line, like you're saying, between the Beyonce and Will thing, is it gets the fine line with people with followings and then talent.
Yeah.
And we're mm-hmm. getting to the point to where, yes, is that music bad, the Beyonce stuff? No, it's good. Is it great? Probably not. But it's good music, but it's outperforming great music, right. And that's where it's going to become a problem.
Wait, but you also, what has all of us jaded, though? Every one of us has been to a writer's round and heard a song that'll never get played on radio.
They'll
never get any fucking attention. And you're like, this is the best fucking song that I've ever heard. So we're always going to root for the artists. Because we know what's out there. We know what we're getting force-fed down our fucking throats with country
average
radio
time
and everything
right now.
Sorry to cut you off.
Sorry to cut you off. The average time right now to get a song cut is 5 to 10 years. It takes 5 to 10 years for a song to be around to get cut. Where the Wild Things are was 7. I mean, there's several. Dirt Cheap was 5 or 6. I mean, there's so many of the top best
songs.
Dude, some of the best songs right now have taken, you know, have to a whole decade to get discovered, and it's just sad that it gets to that point. But you know, eventually it finds its way. But the fact that there's all these people coming in on top of it, being so competitive when they shouldn't be in the competition in the first place.
Think about the next step, though.
Yeah.
Think about the next step. This is how my brain always works: is Nashville, any industry is always looking for what's going to work next. Mm-hmm. Now they're sitting here looking at this, and they're like, "Oh fuck, this is what people like." Let's pander to this. And if you're pandering that on the next step over the next 5 years, that song that we all think is great, that takes 5 to 7 years to get out, now it takes 15 for anybody to notice it.
And
because we're letting shit come in that's taking place of our culture.
Well, here's what's starting to happen, though, is the good thing is that
it's the most
it's
ever talked on this show.
Yeah, you got me fired up
keep
on
going.
A subject.
Yeah.
I never get it fired. It's one subject that bugs a nerve with me, but because now we're getting back to where people are starting to listen to country music that aren't fans of country music, which is great, but then it's going to start going to, we don't care who it is, we don't care, we kind of care what it sounds like, but what the song is, and we're starting to get to go back to good songs, and that is a positive, because if we can get back to good songs, they aren't going to care who, what they look like, what they sound like, who they are. If it's a good song, they're going to relate to it, because they're just wanting songs, they just want to listen to something they like.
I've always said good music is going to rise to the top.
It will. It may take 10 years, but it will.
I actually think that we're primed. Like, I think that the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? So we've like been through periods like this before, and it's like, it's what happened with Willie Nelson when he was part of the Nashville sound and then left and went to Texas. And so, I mean, well, and he chose to, you know, I mean, so he got ran out and then was like, screw it, I'll run. And then went to Texas and the outlaw movement was born. So I also think it's one of those things that like, I think that if we're willing to seize the moment, it's a really exciting time to be a songwriter and an artist, because I think that we're overdue for a new outlaw movement. Because, like, the outlaw movement was born out of the Nashville sound, right? Like, because we had to, that was Willie Nelson and his people rebelling against pandering, essentially. Yeah. And so I think, like, if we can embrace it from that standpoint and go, well, spotlight's on the genre, so we might as well go crazy and make some great shit. Like, let's go for it.
Not even,
you know,
an outlaw movement, but more of a music revolution. Because if you look at eras in music, so you go back to the 70s, you had all the classic rock stuff that just blew up out of nowhere. 90s, you had 90s country and grunge going on the radios at the same time. And then now it's about to come back to the 2020s of, hey, we're fixing to get another revolution. That it's going to be 3 or 4 or 5 years of so much music that it's going to take 10, 15 years to discover it again.
Well, like, you have guys like Zach Bryan putting out work tapes. You know, I think there's something to be said about quantity over quality. And I don't know if that's good or bad or not yet. But one hot take that I have just about Nashville in general, oh, my God, this might get me in trouble, guys. I don't care. I actually don't care. I'd say it to somebody's face. Listen, I won't say.
As opposed to naming yourself Stun Gun Sally.
I won't. Stun Gun Sally's got something to say. And I won't say nothing unless it's something I'd say to their face. I mean,
I'm dead serious. Yeah. We're writing
Girl, that. We're writing that.
We're writing Stun Gun Sally.
Here's my hot take. I think half these label heads that are running everything in Nashville right now, there's only a handful of them. Y'all know. It's artists. Half of them have never stepped foot in a trailer, have never stepped foot in a field out in BFE, Alabama to go see a show, have never been out to BFE, Georgia to go play, you know, a farm thing. They've never done that. And I think that's part of the problem where I'm like literally insane to where I read the comments on everything that like Whiskey Riff or Country Music Nation posts. No, I do. I read it because I want to see what like the average Joe wants, because I know as a country artist, if I'm representing the people of country music, then I'm representing the real people, like the backbone of America.
Well, the thing with that though is if you'll just be you, you never have to ask that question.
Yeah. Totally. And I found my audience
You don't ever have to. You're never. Somebody told me a long time ago when I started all this shit, 7, 8 years ago, you don't ever make anything from the people that you grew up with. You don't never make a video. You don't ever make a song. You can dedicate something to your mom, dad, whatever, but you don't ever make stuff for them. You make stuff for you and the people that love you outside of what you are now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you start building a fan base. You start building followers. You start building stuff to where these people love me. They're going to support me. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get hung up on the negative side of that. They read those comments. You're never, ever going to make the people who don't like you like you. You're not going to drop a badass song next week.
Ever.
You're like, it's the best song I ever wrote. They're never going to admit they like you. They're never going to fucking buy a ticket. But if you keep being you, the people that you've made a connection with, and you keep making art for you, those people are just going to share your shit. They're going to put it out there.
I was going to say it on the good side, though. When I'm reading the comments, the most that I see is like every time I see something from like Lainey Wilson, people love her because she is so genuine. And that she is who she is. She came from what she came from, and she don't have no shame behind it. You know, I went to Dollywood this past weekend, and I was watching her little show, and she always would talk about, you know, how she grew up and everything. And there was never a hint of anything in her voice that said, I'm ashamed of where I come from. No. And, I mean, when I come to town, I felt that way because, you know, I've had people before in the industry say, you need to learn how to speak. You need to learn how to, you know, you need media training, you need this, that, and the third. I probably do need media training because I'm a little off the rails. But here's the thing, like, if you're going to reduce me down to what I come from, then what the hell is country music?
You think that Miranda Lambert didn't embrace the off the rails?
I remember Miranda Lambert going,
like, people love that shit.
Oh, my God. I remember there's this thing of her down in Texas playing, and she was too young to be in a bar, and her daddy got in a bar fight for her, and she said, kick his ass, daddy. Like, where is that? That's the outlaw that we've been missing that we was talking about.
But also, everything's cyclical, too. So I think, like,
I don't know what that word means.
Know,
did you say cyclical?
Yeah, in a cycle.
It's repetitive.
Recyclable. Like cycling around, cycling back around.
Look here, I'm just going to tell you, for me and the listeners, my listeners don't know what cyclical means.
Yes, they do. Give them more credit.
Let's not. Y'all don't be trying to fancy that shit.
Raise your hand if you know.
Sorry.
Use regular.
Okay. All right. Let me start over. Recyclable. Shit comes back around. And no, but like for real though, it you know, I think about, like, I was raised in a time where, like, so I've got a deep, smoky voice, right? Slight. And that's just who I am. It's, and so I, but I grew up in a time where, like, really high, squeaky pop voices were the same. And fitting in with them just didn't work. And I just remember, like, I'm so excited to be where I am now. And, like, would it have been more fun if when I was 16, smoky, deep voices were, like, having a moment? Sure. But screw it. They're having a moment now, and that's who the hell I am. And so the other side of it is if you keep doing you, it'll come back around. Like, trends will come back around. Everything comes back around. And so you kind of just have to, like, I mean, you know, kind of back to the whole, like, conversation of authenticity. Like, it just do you.
Right place, right time.
Yeah, just do you.
That's all it is with most of y'all. And it's just hard. It's hard to tell anybody that hasn't had that little bit of moment. Like, mm-hmm. I'm big on, you don't want to get to where you want to be because then your journey's over. You're supposed to appreciate the ride. If you get to where you want to be.
Wait, I fucking love that.
You've got to start over. Like, you do. You think about it. If you all you ever wanted was to play the Grand Ole Opry, and that was your goal, what happens the next day after you play the Grand Ole Opry? You have to start over, and you're depressed. Why not appreciate the journey and just take the little things that happen to you as a victory? Mm. Like, you might not win the war at the end, but you won a lot of battles on the way.
Yeah.
And it makes you have a different perspective to where it's like, no, I'm cool with this. Like, today, doing a show with y'all, this is a victory for me. To where I could have been doing something stupid on Broadway right now.
Acting a fool. Yeah, I saw you were that's for after, babes.
And to wrap all that together and backtrack a little bit, you know, we're all talking about, you know, at what point are you doing it for other people or are you doing it for yourself? You know, when you think about, you know, trying to, you know, do the best podcast you can be or be the best artist. I was watching an interview. You were talking about Lainey Wilson. This is one of my favorite things. It's Garth Brooks and Lainey Wilson talking. They're back and forth, and Garth asked her this question. I'll never forget this, and I've been trying to remind myself this daily, is at what point of a percentage, if you have 100%, are you doing it for somebody else, and are you doing it for yourself? Ask yourself that. And the best answer I've ever heard is she came back and said, I think that's when 200% is the best answer, because you give 100% to them and 100% to yourself. Well, so if you think about that and putting what you're doing, is as much as you give it out to yourself, you're giving out to the little kid that's in the front row, you know,
well, it's just
idolizing you.
It's just like a relationship. A lot of people think that relationships must be 50-50.
Yeah.
It's not. The best relationships are 100-100.
Yeah.
It's, I don't need you, but I want you. Right. And that's the same thing with being an artist, podcaster, whatever. I have to give you 100% of me. And if I give you 100% of me, then you owe it to me to give me 100% of you. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be fake. I don't need to try to be somebody else. I don't need to try to do anything for anybody else. You're either going to love me for 100% of me or not at all.
And Josh, you know, me and you are both fans of, you know, old movie quotes and old music. One of my favorite movie quotes is Where the Red Fern Grows. One of my favorite movies of all time.
You look like you watch that a lot.
Dude, I love
that's a banger, dude.
Movie. Big Dan and Little Ann, don't get me started. Anyways, I love me some Red Fern Grows. One of my favorite is they're talking, Billy and his, you know, his grandpa that's running the store is talking. And he said, well,
I've cried. I know the movie.
You know the movie. But just to bring up the scenario for everybody that doesn't know, is that he's talking to his grandpa that owns the store, and they're talking back and forth. And he said, well, Grandpa, I wish I could have a hound like that. He said, well, I don't think God wants me to have a hound. He said, son, you got to meet God halfway. And I feel like when you're doing and putting your heart and soul out to what you're doing, you have to meet your fans halfway.
Yeah. And that's I think you have to... I don't know.
Because you have to do your part, and they got to do their part back.
They have, but you've got to realize, you're not going to make everybody your fans.
No.
There's no way to meet some people halfway in the middle.
Right.
The people that love you and support you and those are going to buy those tickets are the ones that love you because you're 100% and you're not trying to meet them. Like, even me, Aaron Lewis is one of my favorite people to listen to talk, whatever. And you know what? He'd probably tell me to go fuck myself if I said the wrong thing. To me, I respect the shit out of that because he's such him. And I think that's how most of the fans, whether they listen to the show or they buy y'all's music or go support y'all, they want to see you when you go. Any of y'all ever went and saw David Allan Coe because he's David Allan Coe? Anybody ever went and saw Hank Jr. because he's Hank Jr.?
Right.
You didn't give a fuck what he was going to play.
But I feel like the fans always feel the respect coming back from them. Like
they feel if it's genuine or not.
being there, that you're honored that they are there. Like, that's the halfway.
I've been to shows before where artists have been, like, you know, some type of way where you can literally, I don't know, maybe I'm just a really intuitive person, but, like, I can always tell if an artist wants to be there or not. And there's been some times where I've seen an artist, and, like, even on my worst days, like, this isn't, like, to toot my own horn or anything, because I've had bad days, and I've been a complete bitch to people. And everyone does. But, like, if I'm in a place, just here's the thing. If I was in a place where I get to do music for a living and write songs with my friends every day and sing them on stage with my friends every day,
that's a dream.
I could not imagine being hateful to a fan that's in the audience that is paid to come see me. That's something that I'm, like, real fed up with in Nashville. I've seen a lot of artists do that lately, and I'm like, if you're, and then people will write it off, you know, these people will be like, oh, she's just, you know, she's not really a social butterfly. Why the fuck are you in music then? Because this is a people industry.
You just made my point though for me though.
It is. I'm agreeing with you.
You are playing those shows for yourself. And you're going to be appreciative of the people that are there watching you.
I couldn't imagine.
But you're not doing the show because of them.
I feel like you start out that way.
I
feel like you start. I feel like
you
start.
If it wasn't for them.
My thing is, I feel like you start out that way. In that interview, that same one I was talking about with Garth Brooks and Lane Wilson, I feel like you start out that way. But then there's going to be some point in the part of your career where that changes, where you start not doing it for yourself and you start appreciating the heritage of music and the love that you have for music and the why you started doing this in the first place. So I feel like, yes, you start out doing it for yourself, but then there's going to be a time that you're doing it for the kid front row that could possibly be you in the future.
That's what I always start out with, because I'm like, why would you do this industry if it wasn't for the people that got you there? And maybe I have a weird take on it, but, like, I had a label head in a meeting a couple of weeks ago ask me, are you here for them or are they here for you? And I said, I'm here for them. What do you mean? If I'm writing a song that's going to make someone forget about their worries for a while, or if I'm writing a song that's going to make somebody cry because it's, like, means so much to them and it's their story put into words, why in the world would I be some type of hateful to them? Or, you know, act like not an artist. I mean, to me, it's just, personally, it's just I'm a person and I'm telling my story and I'm hoping someone can relate to it.
I think y'all are just, like, the most mature artists around, though. Like, honestly, because I see shows all the time. Like, live music is my thing. So I remember seeing a band in the Stockyards once, and they were wonderful. Their music was great or whatever. But I could feel that they did not appreciate their audience at all. Like, they were so full of themselves. They did not connect with the audience. I felt nothing. They were great, and I have never listened to them again. I see them there all the time, and I don't care.
I love hearing that. Like, it makes me feel not crazy. Yes, actually, I do.
Right now.
All right, we're recording again. After a piss break, what we have decided to do is fuck this podcast. But if you've listened this far, you've got something out of it. And we're here in Nashville all week recording anyway. Please come out to Live Oak. Connor, hush. That's why it's so hard.
I like my mustache guy. Be nice to him.
Connor's nice as fuck. It's just sometimes if you don't know it's recording, you just don't know it's recording. I was just fucking with you, Connor. Some people be getting mad when I be doing that. Like,
I'd cry personally.
It's hard to direct. And, like, host, very hard. I need, like, somebody who doesn't want to make any money ever to just sit over here and do all this shit for me and tell y'all what to do. There you go, Connor.
I got a few people.
Right, well, y'all are artists. Y'all know people that don't
That's
mind
a lie.
For peanuts. But anyway, this Wednesday, Live Oak the 10th, we'll be having our next Raising Grace Rounds. And it starts at 5 and ends at 11. It's going to be a good time. We're ending that night with Brian Martin, Sam Williams, and Ben Roberts. But the whole lineup. The whole lineup. Before that, we got Skinny and Cole Goodwin, who had to take off, and Breanne Young. I don't have the thing in front of me, but it's just Kimberly Atwood's playing that night. Like, it's good. It's a good lineup. And I just want to say this real fast before we get off here. I appreciate all y'all coming. You guys are actually guys and ladies that I very much like, that I don't mind supporting. I don't mind... I don't know. There's just a lot of people that I don't want to do shit with. There's just a lot of people that I'm not going to take the time to. Like, not that y'all should be, like, grateful or nothing. But
I'm grateful.
I'm grateful.
I'm in the cool kids club.
I say that because I want y'all to know, because not enough people tell y'all on a regular basis how talented you are. And I don't like fucking with people I don't think aren't talented in one way or another, whether you are starting a podcast like Heather or you do OnlyFans like Missy or everything that y'all do with music. Like, you're talented in what you do. And I just appreciate y'all hanging out for a little bit and being real. You know how many people you get on the show and they're just fake as fuck? They tell you just what their social media says. And they don't tell you who they actually really are.
Toe the party line.
And when they have a chance to be vulnerable and make people that are going to support them forever, like, they don't take the chance. They'd rather be fake. So I just love being around real ass people and y'all being unapologetic about it.
I know, I'm going to be real. I might get us canceled, but I'm going to be real, you know.
Do it.
Sweetheart, if I haven't got me canceled yet, y'all are good.
Yeah, we're good.
Oh, yeah. You don't understand. Like, some of these shows that we've done, and I've been shit-faced, so I really don't... There's been some questionable shit that has been said on this show.
Chili Dog has
the last couple of years, I've been Josh Terry's chauffeur, and if that guy can't get canceled, then nobody
Joe Rogan says something I really, really like, and I hope y'all will remember this as artists. You can get your social media deleted. You can get people saying ugly shit on it, but you and your dreams can't get canceled.
Nope.
Like, you can't. Like, if you're doing what you love and you're putting that into the world, people can be as negative as they fucking want to. They can try to bring you down in whatever way, but you can't get canceled. You only get canceled if you allow you to feel some type of way about your social media if it goes away. That ain't you. You was you way before those fucking numbers and those likes and those shares.
I just tried to drink my microphone, so I might. I don't know.
I did that a minute ago.
Hey. I can't fucking help y'all with that now.
Hey, I do that every night.
Hey.
Chili, I'm not even. Anyway, real fast.
You know he's not lying. He's not lying.
Real fast before we get out of here. Missy, we start with you. I need you to drop your social medias, your links and stuff, and we'll go around. We want to make sure everybody's listening to the show, goes, follows each and every one of y'all on social media.
That sounds good to me. I'm pretty much You Found Missy everywhere. So just You Found Missy.
And I promise you, if you find Missy, it's all right.
You're going to know. Yes.
It's all right.
It's a good time.
How do I good follow luck. That? mine is Music by Lockwood, LOCKWOOD. And if you find another Lockwood bar, we're cousins. Not a joke. So.
That's cute.
No way.
Skinny. So I had to change cameras.
Yeah. I have Lil Skinny Music, LIL underscore skinny underscore music. It's like Lil Wayne, but take the Wayne off, put a skinny on it.
That was fucking stupid.
Oh my God.
No, I'm not.
That was fucking stupid.
No, I'm not a rapper.
Not yet.
Obviously.
Not yet. Get him a couple more drinks, he'll be.
I'm telling you, because you know what? If I say what I want to say right now, you're going to make me delete it. I'll tell you.
I will.
You're going to have to tell you after the show. What?
Nah, bro. Skinny will be down here. He'll be cool. 4 to 5, Tuesdays at on Broadway. I guarantee it.
Oh, absolutely.
Damn right.
Speaking. Chili fucking end it, dude. Hey. Gotta get to them.
Hey, you all can find me at Chili Dog Music or the official Chili Dog on TikTok. Chili Dawg. The official. Don't forget the official.
Is there an unofficial one?
I'm going to start
one. I'm going to start unofficial.
There's a bunch of unofficial.
So my alter ego will be unofficial Chili Dog. You're welcome.
Oh, yeah.
Heather, make sure you tell them the name of your podcast. Because I like you, and I want people to go check it out.
Okay, so you can find me, instant TikTok. It's Utah Girl and Nash. So I'm from Utah. Utah Girl and Nash.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. And my podcast, you can find the links there if you go. But Wandering the Wild Mess with Heather Morgan.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Connor, you done sat here this whole time and said a word. You can end it.
He sat in the baby.
White chair. Steve Harvey is my Instagram and TikTok.
Never mind. Never mind. Never mind. Never mind.
We got to go.
Never mind. All right. Now you say yours, and then I say goodbye.
Oh, is it my turn?
You're the last one.
Well, I thought you was just skipping me because I was acting a fool. Okay, Cassidy Daniels
the
music.
The camera has to end on me.
Cassidy Daniels music. Cassidy like the Grateful Dead song. Daniels like Jack. On all platforms, if you want to see me act a fool, get on TikTok. That's it.
My favorite hippie. Are you? What are you doing?
Hippie dippy.
Why are you raising your hand again?
I was just going, yeah, girl.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Anyway.
It's getting weird.
Please. I say it every time. A lot of y'all don't get a chance to hear some of these artists. Some of them haven't got a chance to put anything on radio yet. And plus, a lot of them is way better than fucking radio in the first place. So if you heard them on this show, it's somebody that I like. I support that. I think their music is good. If you like anything that I've ever played you guys, do me a favor, go check out their whole catalogs, go follow them on all social medias, besides for Skinny.
I'm surprised you call me Skinny today.
It's like Lil Wayne, but
what does
not.
He normally call you? Jackass?
We don't want to know what he normally calls me.
I call him my future ex-husband.
His ass to take me home is what I do.
You didn't call him. He's got another name for him.
Me too.
For shit that he can drive a fucking minivan real well.
Fuck you.
Just play.
As long as I write songs, drive minivans, I'm cool with it.
As long as you drive minivans,
here's
your
sign.
Fuck you.
Skinny, don't ever get on the show. That was because you never fucking talk on him.
Here's
I love
your
you guys.
I talked on
Thank
this one.
Shut up, Skinny. I'm saying goodbye. I love you guys. Goddamn. You give him one compliment, motherfucker, and thinks he can talk over the host at the end of the show. Skinny, you tell him goodbye.
No, you end it.
I'll tell him goodbye.
I was going to say, what if one of the white girls does it?
Yeah.
Since Here's we're going to interrupt.
Ready? One, two, three.
You call
three.
Me out.
Goodbye.
That was stupid, but... Bye, y'all. We'll catch you next time.